information on all the shows, visit the official Fringe website. That's montrealfringe.online.red61.ca. And Community Cooks Collective is looking for volunteer drivers to deliver meals to Resilience Montreal and The Open Door. Both these organizations serve Montreal's low-income and unhoused communities. If you have a car and would like more information on how to volunteer, send a direct message to the handle Community Cooks Collective on Instagram.
One Stop Caribbean Cuisine is the place to be. The best tasting food, West Indian food. Check it out.
334
St. Jacques Street.
The one and only.
Chef X. And the best. Everyone calling up his name, talking about him.
All type of food ready right there.
Fish, vegetable, oxtail, curry goat, jerk chicken.
That same tasting Caribbean food in a Montreal.
And then me go when me left Jamaica.
Go there right now. The food delicious, delicious.
West Indian Caribbean cuisine.
I will be there. Check it out, check it out.
Is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5. This is Pro V. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today's show is going to be an interview with D Shade. Last week was the Best of Shades of Culture mix from DJ Storm, and this week we got D Shade in the building. Yeah, it's basically going to be a part one because, you know, we came through the crib, talked for a long time, and so we're going to mix it up from this week and next week. So this week we're going to be talking about the creation of Shades of Culture, hip-hop in the 1980s in Montreal, early hip-hop shows, like I said, Shades history, so touring, releases, working with DJ Choice, Dave One, videos that they did, and a whole lot more. Next week is going to be part two. And so enjoy the show, enjoy the interview. Thank you very much to D Shade from Shades of Culture for coming through to give us his history, tell us his stories, and learn more about the history. All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. Enjoy the show. Peace. All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. We got D Shade in the building. I'm gonna do a little Shades of Culture, D Shade history. It's been a while. We're trying to line this up, and so happy to have him on the show. You know, Montreal history right here. So happy to have you, man. And
yo, happy,
looking forward
happy
to hearing
to be here finally. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, we've been talking about it a lot, and you know, we both, you know, put a lot into the culture and the music here in the city. So it's, you know, finally, you know.
And recently, you know, we got to talk to DJ Storm, got to talk to DJ Choice,
yeah.
And all that stuff is your history as well.
Yeah, you know? It's so, family, you
know, not just from where you guys grew up, but everything you guys did musically.
Yeah,
for a good part of time. So
yeah, and it's weird that happened after, you know, after us hanging out and absorbing the culture that was here and abroad. So yeah.
So how did that start? You know, how did music start with you?
I guess I went to Marymount. I went to Marymount High back in the days, same place where they did the block parties right behind there, and it was straight up something out of New York. So I went to Marymount, and you had three or four of the main B-boy breaking crews that were going to school there. It was LS Crew, Something Different. We had a couple of guys from Vision Force that were going there. And Up Rocking Crew. So those guys, they were out doing the shows, everything. Like at lunchtime, there was cardboard out in the yard, schoolyard. And there were, you know, B-boy cyphers. And that already blew my mind. And I was exposed to the music, but the culture as a whole, I was lucky to be going to that school at the time to be able to have not only the music at the time, but the b-boying and the dancing and the DJs, you know?
And for people who want to know where that is in the city, Marymount is basically like a, not even a 5-minute walk from Villa Maria Metro.
Yeah, it's now just St.
Off,
Luke.
Yeah, just off of, what's that?
It's now St. Luke. It's not, it's, back in the days, Marymount was on West Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
In DG, but then we switched schools with them, so we ended up being up at St. Luke School.
Up at so the Grand and Côte Saint-Luke. Yeah, man. Okay.
But this was right near Villa Maria Metro.
Yeah. That was the closest metro to it.
Right.
But yeah, continue, man.
Yeah, so that basically, you know, it let me know that there was, you know, a culture just within our city. Because other than that, I was listening to mixtapes that Choice would bring back.
Okay.
From Detroit and the States, and, you know, WBLS tapes back in the days of press record and play and, you know, let it run for the whole show. And then he'd bring it back for us to listen to. And the first thing that blew my mind in the music was, I'd have to say, Eric B. is President. Like, I'd heard other stuff before, but Eric B. is President was something different for me. And then I didn't want to hear anything else but rock him for a while. You know, Run DMC as well. Like, those were my influences that I came up with.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for our exposure to the music in the States, like through, you know, mixtapes that people were passing around from the DJs like Butcher T and LDG, who I salute them because they championed the movement here. They brought music back, but they worked with artists here like DJ Ray, Freaky D, early 80s. And there was, like I said, there was stuff going on. There were parties at this club called Checkers, which was right on the corner of Park and Mount Royal. Mm-hmm. And it was basically one of the original after-hours places, basically. So it was open till 6-7 in the morning. And, you know, a lot of the artists, a lot of the DJs would go hang out there after their regular shifts at the club. And you'd always run into, like, you know, the rappers at the time. Like, you know, like I said, Freaky D, DJ Ray, and some of the other rappers, some of the other DJs, like Butcher T, for example, like I was mentioning, who had a radio show on CKGM, AM radio. It was called The Quality Crew.
Okay.
So it was DJ Ray, Sean Juan, Butcher T, Wavy Wanda, and Baby Blue. Okay. And DJ Ray. So it was crazy because we didn't have anything like that at the time. But like I was saying, like, the DJs would bring the records back, and Mike Williams, who later on went on to do Much Music and
Rap City over there,
he was already here doing music on CKGM, AM radio, you know? Mm-hmm. And that opened up the door for that show, the Quality Crew show. It wasn't long, it was once a week, but at least there was an outlet for us to keep up to date with the music. Besides, now we had people bringing mixtapes in, and not even mixtapes, just radio recordings from the shows. Yeah. And then we had you know, the DJs that were bringing the music back and, you know, showing us a bit of the culture, a lot of the culture.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd be where we're at without those guys. Foundation, and it was important to us at the time. Still is.
Yeah, man. No downloading. That was your downloading. They were the ones getting it and bringing it back.
And it's
supplying the city with it.
Yeah, and Butch and LDG and Flight, they're still around. These are guys that had the radio shows. And, you know, shout out to CKUT, yeah, longevity. I used to listen to the Sound Supreme show every Saturday night before, you know, before going to hang out or going to a club or whatever. LDG and Flight, and religiously listened to that because, again, LDG and Flight, they knew their music. They knew how to break records over here for us. So we were, you know, we were up to par with Toronto, and we were getting stuff, you know, fresh off the press because these guys would travel to get it.
Yeah.
Now you can just download it, like you're saying. These guys actually, you know, put in footwork.
Yeah, to get that. So, what was, you say, like, the first track that really drew you in was Eric B. and Rakim, Eric B. for President.
Yeah.
And what?
Well,
go ahead.
I had heard, what was it, maybe 84... Run DMC did this song called It Was a Dream, and The Way It Is, and those songs I loved it.
Yeah.
And these guys, you know, everybody loved Run DMC, but I felt like something special about Rakim.
Yeah.
And the way he rapped and the way he formulated and the words he used. And so that's what made me really want to rap. Mm-hmm. Before I was a fan, but yeah, that made me really want to.
That really brought it.
Yeah.
And he even recorded differently.
Yeah.
Like he arrived at Marley Marl's studio and he wanted to record sitting down.
Yeah.
And Marley Marl's like, no, you got to stand up. You got to give it that energy. And he was like, no, I'm good. Like, I know what I'm doing. Like.
Yep.
And for someone who was, you know, quotations, a nobody at the time,
yeah,
to tell Marley Marl, who was, you know, quotations, somebody at the time, was like funny. Marley Marl was like, who is this guy telling me that he's going to sit down? But then afterwards, he had to give it to him, like, oh, okay, I get it now, because everybody was on it. Everybody was feeling what Rakim was doing and felt that. It was different, that, you know, something
was
bringing.
So different, man. So different, where, you know, the four, every two bars was different than the other one. You know, it wasn't like four bar schemes all the time. It was like, it was intricate, mm-hmm. weaving in and out, and then, you know, rhyming everything in that cadence. It was like unheard of at the time. Unheard of at the time.
Yeah, man.
Special Ed's another one who had an unorthodox pattern when it came to rhyming, not like anything else out there. Yeah. At the time, you know,
it's like they would talk to the people and not rap at them.
Yeah
I'm not gonna yell at you and do it, I'm just gonna talk to you and let you know, and then do it in that style.
And just cool.
And Slick Rick would do that too.
Slick,
you know?
Rick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, EPMD, like, I always called them the Kings of Cool because they were all, it was just, there's no other word for what they were doing at the time. It was like that. It was just some cool shit, man. These guys were laid back, chill, you know?
And what shows do you remember being like your first hip-hop shows in Montreal?
Public Enemy of James Ling.
89?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the same one that, I think Flight was hosting, DJ Flight, LDG was spinning. Yeah, it was 89 at James Ling. That was one of my first shows that I ever, like, gone to on that, you know, on that level. Mm-hmm. I'd seen, you know, a couple of locals, Breakdance 84, which was a huge thing for this city.
Talk about that before we get too far into, yeah, into the late 80s.
Well, Breakdance 84 was crazy because, again, the hype was every day at my school, Marymount, right? And we had all the most of the B-boy crews there, and then Breakdance 84 came on, and like so many crews I'd never heard of were out there, and they had, you know, a couple of people emceeing. It was really straight out of New York. Yeah. And the other groups that weren't going to my school, I used to see them every Friday night at this place called Centre de Danse in Longueuil.
Okay.
And
yeah, Choice brought up that Centre de Danse spot up in Longueuil. Yeah.
If you've seen the scene in Beach Street at the Roxy's, the big battle.
Yeah.
That's what that was every Friday for us. Smaller spot, but, and it was, I tell people about that and they think I'm crazy.
They think you're exaggerating.
They think I'm exaggerating. Yeah, yeah. They think I'm exaggerating. Like, people used to come out and just battle and dance and enjoy themselves, have a good time, vibe, yeah, out, and, you know, the style at the time.
Yeah, man. And the thing is that we're geographically very close to New York. It's just a drive away.
Yep.
And a lot of people from the city, especially in those times, you know, of West Indian descent, and that connects with, you know, Caravana, that connects with going to Labor Day weekend in New York, and those kind of things,
yep,
would constantly influence Montreal in one way or another, whether it was, you know, getting like those trips to New York, random trips to New York,
yep,
or those types of things. And I feel like that always connected things in a way that people didn't really understand or don't know, you know, unless they do know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It was that connection. Like, I knew whole families that used to, you know, they'd go to New York, you know, kids would record the music, go out shop, come back with fresh gear, pinstripe Lees, like stuff you don't see anymore. But if you saw them, you'd be like, wow, that's fly, you know? So, and again, it's coming back here. And, it was a thing. It still is, like, but around the whole world now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hip-hop for back then was like, like you said, if you know, you know. They used to say, that thing is dead. But, you know,
yeah,
urban music came out of that.
Yeah, not to everybody who was living it.
Right? Living it, and whether they say it or admit it or not, you can't go anywhere without that cultural influence these days.
Mm-hmm. So there was the 84 breakdance, there was the Longueuil battles every Friday night.
Yeah.
Anything else you remember from those times as well? That, well, these, you know, the events at Marymount.
Yeah, events at Marymount.
There.
And we used to go to this place called St. Catherine's Dances. It was a school in LaSalle. And
which school?
St. Catherine of something.
Okay.
St. Catherine's. We used to call them the St. Cat Dances.
Yeah.
And actually, that got introduced to us by some of the B-boys that were going to Marymount. So we went out there one night and fell in love with the place. Went there till they stopped doing the dances. But what was special about there, that was like a Friday night, Saturday night, Friday night dance. So go there, DJs are spinning, but the other thing that got me thinking, wow, I could actually try this rap thing. Every Friday, Chuck Ice from OPP and his crew would get up on stage with the DJ, make him run an instrumental, and they perform live,
mm-hmm,
for the dance, just like that. Chuck was like one of the first rappers that I, you know, I saw live yeah. and direct, like that I could, you know, talk to and
we've been, you interacted with.
Interacted with. Yeah. We've been, you know, we've been friends till this day. And we still do a bit of work together and stuff.
For
so
sure, for sure.
But yeah, you should get him up here too. He's, you know,
oh yeah,
he's
we're lining it up. Nice. We've been talking. So
yeah, okay. That's blessed. Cause like I said, yeah, if that was the deal sealer when I saw that dudes here were rapping
at the same level.
At the same level, like. Anyways, I'm sure he has some of the old tapes. They're floating around, but mm-hmm. same level. You know, Tape MC and P-Fly, which Choice actually produced for both of those mm-hmm. groups.
Yeah.
Same level. Up to par with the States, whatever, you know.
Well, you said a tape floating around, and just the other day, I think Choice had sent a tape, a part of a tape to Devious, and it was a Chuck Ice freestyle mm-hmm. that they had done in Choice's basement way back in 1990, and that sounded like, you know, G-Rap-esque, kind of, not to say it like that, but just that late 80s destruction, like, you know, an MC who's just tearing things apart type of.
He reminded me of Shan at the time.
That kind of thing, too. Because he has a tone in his voice that's similar to that. And then the attack, that's what reminds me of G-Rap. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
And Choice used to rap, too.
Yeah, Choice. And he sounded good when he rapped.
Yo.
It was not a, like, on that old Shade stuff, you know? Like, you guys.
A little bit about us.
Yeah, you guys pressed up the Little Bit About Us stuff recently. And when I was going through that, I was like, that's Choice. And then he'll say his name in the verse. I'm like, oh, it is Choice. And I was like, bless you.
Thanks.
And I was like, oh, man, this guy's like, he actually knows what he's doing. Doesn't sound like, oh, they really like had to convince him to rap on this. No, like, it sounds like he knows what he's doing.
Out of all my good friends and family, like, Choice is like, he's the natural out of all of us. Like, mm-hmm. everything that he does, he ends up doing really well. And he doesn't lose himself. Mm-hmm. That's what keeps it, you know, amazing. Because, you know, a lot of people, they're good at a couple of things. But, man, this guy, when he applies himself, and he knows where his strengths are, so... And that's some shit that I learned from him over the years, just in life in general, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, I don't know where we're at in the chronology of things.
So, yeah, we're at, like, 84, B-Boy Battles, Centre de Danse in Longueuil, which we used to have to run... to the metro to catch the last bus to the metro. Yeah, last bus to the metro. Otherwise, yeah, you're stuck out there.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not walking across the bridge.
Nah. Yeah. Not at all.
Yeah, so...
And I was, like, back then, I was, yeah, was, you know, I couldn't go all the way to Buffalo for these shows called Fresh Fest and those events where you know, at the festivals, you had Biz Markie, the Fat Boys, Run DMC, all playing just in Buffalo, New York. It's mm-hmm. it's not far, as we now know, but as a kid, you're like, well, my mom ain't going to let me go Buffalo,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, at what point did you hear Chuck Ice and that, and you know that you're saying that really inspired you to start writing and thinking you could do it too? What year was that? Like, what time was that?
I'd say around 84, 85.
Okay.
Yeah, 84, 85, and I did a bit of break dancing. We weren't the best, but I had a crew called Future Shock, and we did a couple of local talent shows and stuff like that. But I wrote a rhyme for, you know, for us. So I'd rhyme, let the guys do their routine, join in, and do that thing. So I think that's probably one of the first rhymes that I wrote, and I don't remember it right now, but yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, that's probably the first thing I ever wrote for the crew. So, and then another influence, another person that was rhyming before me that kind of important, because we used to hang out by our friend's place in DG, and he used to come by, Sport D. He's one of the, you know, guys that were out there when Chuck Ice and Tape and those guys were rhyming. They actually battled Chuck and Sport D back in the days. Okay. And yeah, it was legendary battle. Same with Tape and Chuck battled as well. That's another legendary, but I'll let them tell that story. But yeah, Sport D used to come by and hang out in afternoons and just chill, and he was rhyming already and writing really well. So, you know, after a few sessions of sitting with him and, you know, seeing, okay, how to, you know, piece bars together and how to, you know, project, I took it even more seriously and started, you know, writing bars and, you know, verses. And living in DG at the time, you know, there were a lot of crews, you know, a couple of crews that we'd meet up by NDG Park. That's how I actually linked up with Rev Revolution from Shades of Culture. I met him just after I met Sport D. A couple of my friends were in a band with a reggae artist, Smokey Joe and Keyshy.
Okay.
Rev's mom was playing sax in the band at the time, and she introduced me to Smokey. And she was playing bass. My bad. She was playing bass, and she said, "Yeah, come by, you know, check out Smokey." And she goes, "I know you rap. My son raps. You know, you guys should meet up." So we met up at NDG Park, and he was already part of a crew called Crayola Burns Factory. So Crayola Burns Factory. It was everything. It was, you know, b-boying. There were guys that were doing a lot of graffiti. So, you know, Akira-san,
yeah,
our boy, rest in peace. All those guys were nice. Nice, you know, doing graffiti, chant. So they do a bit of reggae, a bit of dancehall, and rap, and DJ. So it was a dope crew.
And you're saying this was all going out of NDG Park?
Well, this is, yeah, all guys that grew up around NDG. So we'd hang out by the soccer, you know, the soccer square.
Yep.
And, yeah, we'd link up there with, you know, just hanging out, you
yeah,
know,
for sure,
and talk about the music and whatnot. And then me and Rev hit it off because his mom made it so.
Yeah.
And we didn't stop hanging. At the time, there was a place called T-Zone almost on the corner of Prudhomme. So between Prudhomme and DeCary in DG, they did T-shirt printing, so silk screening. They had the silk screens there, and Akira worked there at the time.
Crazy. I grew up on that block.
Yeah,
just up the street on DeCary.
Okay, I used to live right on Prudhomme.
I don't remember a lot of things, but my parents used to send me down to Saul's.
Yeah.
To pick up whatever to cook with, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I wasn't shopping at the time, so I don't remember a T-shirt spot. But you're saying it was around.
Yeah,
that
you
time?
Could go bring your T-shirts there. They printed up silk screen at the time.
Crazy.
Akira, natural artist, he was already working there. I think Rev worked there for a bit too, But that was our other like little meeting spot, you know? We could hang out on the stoop in front. And I lived right around the corner. So Prudhomme and Sherbrooke, right on the corner, around from Villa de Sulaki.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
That's the block.
Man. Shout out to Villa. Dollar fries.
Oh, man.
Yo.
Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, so that's how we met up and started hanging out and talking about music. And there was a show at this place called Blue Dog, the original one, not the one. It was closer to Prince Arthur at the time.
So there was a Blue Dog before.
Yeah.
So you're putting me up on Marymount and Blue Dog today.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I was thinking these Marymount stories were from actual Marymount now, but it was actually Côte Saint-Luke High School. It was St. Luke.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And now you're telling me there's another Blue Dog before Blue Dog.
Yeah.
Okay, so Prince Arthur and what?
So it was like around Prince Arthur and Saint-Laurent on the same side that Blue Dog's on.
But just lower.
Yeah. Okay. And Blue Dog at the time was called Onyx.
Okay.
And called Onyx. And actually me and Rev used to go practice our rhymes and stuff, you know, in that bar, because he knew the owner at the time. So we'd go, we'd bring a cassette, we'd run the cassette, and just just practice our thing there.
Go through the motions.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And was a Shades of Culture established, or was it just like, oh, we're going there, we're rapping?
It was CBF, Crayle Burns Factory, for a while. Because we were, just having a good time with it. When we did the show at Blue Dog, there were a couple of people there that had, that had seen us. And there was a bar right down the street called Business. And Business was the place that you go to have a good time, mostly house music at the time. So people that were into house would go there. But the doorman there, Fritz, knew Orion, and he knew that Orion rapped. And he was always interested, in what we were doing and whatnot. So, shout out to Fritz. He's in the six now. But he ended up being the manager and owner of the Purple Haze Bar, which is now the Trash Bar, with the skate, skate ramp inside. Mm-hmm. And he actually let us practice and hone our craft there. They had turntables, they had mics, everything was set up. So we would go there, two, three times a week and just, write, practice, and jam. And slowly but surely, we became, it was just me and Orion at the time, and Choice. Choice really, we used to go to his basement, all the time. So myself and Orion go to the basement and listen to music. He was producing on the ASR 10 at the time, so he produced a lot, actually all of our early shit. And at the time he was working with Chuck as well, so there was no better place to be for inspiration and doing our music. Yeah, when I think about it, that basement, so much good music came out of there for everybody that was there. Everybody that had worked with Choice.
Talk about a night at the basement, or however it would happen. What would be the what would go on?
We'd show up. Sometimes depends what we have to do. Sometimes morning, sometimes afternoon, and we would show up Choice would already know exactly what we needed to do, what samples, what beats we needed to work on. So he was already prepared. So it was just a question of coming in, listening to the beats, and vibing out. And this whole time, while that's going on, I'm watching him on the ASR-10, see how he, you know, separates the beat, because it's always something that's, you know, interests me. Mm-hmm. Not that, you know, I was going to produce.
And were you with him in the times that he was using a couple other samplers before the ASR as well? Like, he had some sort of a Casio sampler or something like that.
He had a Casio.
Yeah.
And he was also doing four-track recording. Mm-hmm. With the tapes and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it interesting enough, it had its own distinct, you know, sound. So
I think especially when you're running it to tape, then that tape gives it a texture that, you know, something that you're familiar with just listening to hip hop.
And it feels full.
Yeah,
It feels full.
Kind of compresses the stuff together.
And that was the magic for us, just watching him put the stuff together. Like, you know, it's cool already that he was a phenomenal DJ, like amazing DJ. Like, he's producing amazing music for, you know, artists that need it at the time. And like I said, Chuck Ice, Tape, those guys are, you know, part of the foundation of the city. That I knew, that there were plenty of others that I could mention, like J-Soul, Soul Tribe, Arcade, Misery, Mr. FaZe. These are all guys that were already established, already rhyming in the city. But the guys that I got to work with first were, you know, Choice, and through Choice, Chuck, mm-hmm. and Tape, and, you know, anybody else that came through. But it was magic. It was magic in the basement.
So he lays it down. You guys see whatever. Then you guys get to writing, or is it a freestyle thing, or was it?
Well, he would give us, you know, the raw beat, and tell us just go ham, write on it. And I'll add whatever I need to afterwards. So we get a little bit, you know, get the basic, lay the rhymes down. Then he would add stuff around it to embellish it, whether it's with the vocals or adding samples. It just gives him an idea.
Yeah.
And we got used to working like that, where we would just record, and, you know, get the basics out. But then he started working out of Monogram Studios.
When he signed with, when Zero Tolerance signed.
When Zero signed, our manager Fritz, who I was mentioning, he became our manager. And we got a deal at Monogram as well when we were at, when Choice and Zero were there.
Yeah, because there's an interview with you guys, Shades of Culture, on I think with Mike Williams.
Yeah.
On Much Music.
And
Rhapsody episode, and you could find this on YouTube if you're listening, and you talk about, oh yeah, we got the album coming up on Monogram.
On Monogram Records.
So what happened at that point that the Monogram thing, because you guys didn't drop an album with Monogram, so what happened at that point, and how did that not work
out? We ended up getting a deal to put out, you know, our album on Monogram with, you know, with Choice. Choice was going to produce for us. We did produce a lot of tracks out of there. And when everything was ready to come out, the guy decided to put it on the shelf and not put it out right away. So I'm going to wait. And our manager Fritz was like, for what? And the guy said, it's not the right time. It's not the right time. This guy put us on the shelf. So we bought ourselves out of the situation and became independent artists. And we ended up actually working with 2112 Records, which is was part Greenland Records and one of the president of events at Evenco. They were working together on a label, 2112, Padge Williams, who actually was roommates with Rev, and we've known him for years. Good guy, who helped us out a lot. And so we ended up putting out the first couple of records and mixtapes, not our mixtapes, but our cassettes, cassalbums. Putting out our Kiss albums with
so the Blunt and the IO tapes.
Yeah. Through 2112 with,
so that stuff that was later put out on, you know, A Little Bit About Us, is that the stuff that was created for that Monogram album in those times?
Yeah, so
and basically the stuff on the Blunt album.
Stuff on the Blunt album. It was actually recorded there.
Okay.
It was recorded there.
And that's why it has a, you know, it doesn't sound demo-ish. It sounds well recorded, finished, and mixed. Exactly. What I mean? So that's the story basically as to why those early recordings are all very clean. And
the sound, The sound, because, you know, we got out of the deal, so we own it now. We took everything.
How long did that process take?
Took long enough for our manager to lose it. It took a while, and it was just a question of paying it out. That thing was a problem for a few months, but we were still doing shows like Shades at the time. We were doing a lot of shows, like every week we were doing, you know, one or two shows.
What year was the first Shades show that you were like came out as Shades of Culture, and at what point did DJ Storm come into the fold?
So our first Shades show was with DJ Choice. So DJ Choice was our DJ originally before Storm.
Yeah, for sure.
And we played a few local shows, but our first, because we played a few, you know, small local shows with Choice, a couple of Concordia events, and those went off well. But it's in between that we ended up doing a huge show at Checkers that I mentioned to you, which was it was a rap competition. So we entered with a whole bunch of other groups, and we won that night, and it was DJ Groove, Ville Saint Laurent, George Stecca. He was our DJ for that night, and it blew up. That show is when, Shades became Shades. Shades of Culture for that event, because it was huge. It was everybody that, like I mentioned before, Checkers was a place where different kinds of artists, R&B artists, singers, rappers, dancers, everybody would go hang out at Checkers for the event. And that's when we made, you know, really made a name for ourselves that night. And at the time, we had two other dudes in the crew. Our boy, Zandiwi, this is something that not a lot of people know, but my boy Nigel and my boy Dean were part of the crew when we were practicing at Purple Haze. And, you know, we jammed, we did that show, all of us together. And when the show started, we planned it so that we weren't on the stage when it started. Like, the guy announced Shades of Culture, and one of us was in one corner of the club, another part of the club, other different corners. And then we actually came in a cappella, singing, boom, look out, here we come, boom, look out, here we come, boom, look out, here we come. As we slowly make our way to the stage and meet in the middle, get on stage, and from there we did our songs, but it was live, just from the intro. So,
so those early tracks you're performing, though, you didn't record those tracks. Those were just
Tracks for those times, but we do have the 2 inches. We have the 2-inch tapes, so they're gettable. Storm's got some gems in his basement. I'm sure he's told you.
Okay.
He's got some gems, so it's just a question of looking through them. Because yeah, some really good stuff. Every time I talk to Choice, we'll remind each other of songs that we did that never came out. Like, we have a song called "Back with Facts," and there's a singer on that. And I'm like, Choice, who was the singer on that? Just dude, I did one song and we never heard from him again. I don't remember. We never saw the guy again.
Yeah.
You know, but we do have some gems that could actually see the, you know, could see the light of day if we can get our hands on them.
Man, gotta dig in the vaults.
Yeah.
So you had, so that event, DJ Groove was DJing for
Yeah, he
you
was
guys.
DJing for us. Interim.
That was the first kind of Shades show. And you said you were 4 members, so how did it go from 4 to 2?
It was ended up being conflicting schedules, and at that time me and Orion were just doing that, showing up at the Purple Haze because we had a club to practice in, mm-hmm. 3 times a week, and we were working there. That was our jobs, you know. I was a busboy there,
okay,
early on, okay. So it was kind of a home where we, you know, we get to practice. I had turntables, so it was perfect. Choice would come to the practices, and it was 2 blocks from Monogram at the time. So it just made sense to be there. And at one point, like Saturdays, you'd have like just an open practice. So you'd have MCs just come and hang out, practice their things. We'd go early, get our thing on, and then we'd open it up for artists to come, you know, jam and practice with us, to the point where it just turned into like an involuntary show on Saturdays, just with a bunch of MCs practicing their, you know, doing their thing. At one point, the guys from Dubmatic, who had another DJ at the time, they came in with their manager, Cedric, and they came and hung out for the practices as well. And that's the first time I'd ever met them. And we just jammed for a while. That was our spot to jam. So it got to be known as the place where you could go, you know, hang out with Shades and other MCs from the city. Hmm. And, you know, jam.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like rock bands do, where they have a jam session. It was just that.
Yeah, man.
And get to share our music and, you know, vice versa.
So how did Storm become your guys' DJ?
Yeah, so when Choice was DJing for us at the time, we were jamming at Purple Haze, and he came to us and he mentioned to us that he had an opportunity to do something, and it was to DJ for Dubmatic but also produce and do something.
Yeah.
And he felt a ways a little bit about it because he was already working with us and they'd come to the spot, but he'd been waiting for this opportunity. Like, the zero tolerance thing, which was unfortunate, it came out, but Chuck wasn't around to to be there.
Yeah.
So that didn't work out. So the dramatic thing happened. He approached us. He said, look, I got an opportunity to go do this thing. You know, I need your blessing on it. And for sure, it's family first. So we were like, yeah, blessing. Plus, he told us, yeah, I know this guy, good DJ that I've known for years. And he goes, yeah, do you know? It's Dave Blake, DJ Storm. And we were like, oh, more family. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it was nothing. So that's how two things happened.
And
Dubmatic got a DJ, and we
and you
got,
guys got a DJ, yeah. and Choice still worked with you guys throughout the years, regardless.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we're working on it. Yeah,
oh, that's dope. And so, how was the arrival of Storm and mixing with you and Rev?
Amazing. Our first show was at Fufun. We were talking Music Plus used to do. I think it was a once a month event, but a rap show. And the host at the time, that people could say what they want, he made things like that happen. KCLMNOP, when he was hosting Music Plus, he had Choice on. He had us on, like he.
Well, I was gonna bring that one episode that Choice put up on his YouTube channel.
Yeah,
where I didn't realize, but afterwards looking at it, was like, okay, Shades is there, Chuck Ice is there,
that's
Bart Barnev is there,
and
again,
like without KC pushing that. It would have been something way different. You see how it looked, man. It looked like a block party.
Yeah.
It looked like a block party.
And that was St. Catherine Street.
That was St. Catherine Street, right on the corner in front of the studio. Let's go outside, Casey. Wild. Like, yo. And that's why he was there. Mm-hmm. That's why he was there. He did something like a lot of the others weren't doing.
They wouldn't have thought of doing
respect
that.
To all the forefathers. But that... He opened up the lane for
us. It's just a different energy.
Yeah.
It's just a different energy.
Yeah. Different energy. And that was the show. So they were doing monthly shows at Fufun, and KC was hosting. So that was one of our first shows with Storm. First shows we'd ever had with Storm, and never looked back. Mm-hmm. Never looked back. If anything, we'd have loved to have both those guys on stage at the same time, Choice and Storm. But
you guys did that a couple times later on.
Yeah, we did. We did.
Yeah,
Storm, besides, the guy is a musician. He plays drums. Like, not just plays drums. Like, he plays drums. He's got a drum project coming out just now. So yeah, people need to look out for that. This guy, dangerous.
Yeah,
dangerous. So we'd incorporate that into the sets. Like he'd leave the turntables and go behind the drum set, hang out a beat, do a little freestyle over it.
Yeah, that's
crazy. Yo, and Rev can DJ too. He scratch a little, yeah. So we were happy. And then, there's the road trips, Road trips that, tours and stuff like that.
You guys were touring early, really early before. Was that even before the Monogram deal or around the time of the Monogram deal?
Around the time of the Monogram debacle, right around... That time,
you guys were still basic, not to say it like this, but you were still stressing about the Monogram stuff, and you were on tour,
it's crazy because we knew we were going to be free afterwards. So after a couple of days of mulling it over, we were like, we're going to be out of this thing, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it was fine. It was fine. We ended up all right. So, yeah, the touring happened my first big tour was with the Bad Brains.
Yeah, how do you, you know, somebody will just be like, what? You know, like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
You guys are touring with a legendary, you know, a legendary band like that.
How do you explain
that's not even hip-hop, it's... Hip hop is still kind of brand new at this time. You know, it's only been around for like commercially for, you know, not even 10 years. Like maybe there was something 10 years prior, but it wasn't, you know, albums have only started really dropping since like 84, 85. You know?
Yeah.
And so this is like 92, I guess.
Yeah.
And you got how did something like that happen where, you know?
Well, it was through Padge Williams and 2112 Records. They were doing a lot of punk shows like in the city at the time, bringing groups in, having local shows. They'd been doing it for years. You know, shout out to Dan Webster as well. Fofun was one of the main spots they would do their shows at and whatnot. So Padge already had huge, you know, rep and a background in the punk scene. So one day we're practicing and he shows up at the Purple Haze with the Bad Brains. Because Padge, before he even told us anything, he goes, yeah, he told them, I know a band that would like to support you, you know, on tour, on the road, and they're a hip-hop band, but, you know, come see them. Mm-hmm. This guy shows up with the Bad Brains while we're practicing. Like, what the hell is going on here? And we were in the middle of one of our songs called Mad Lyrics.
Yeah.
So, you know, the chorus kicks in, the song ends. Padge goes, hey, guys. Come meet the Bad Brains. Like, what?
Wow.
You know, like, this is crazy right now. This is crazy right now. And Daryl Jennifer, the bassist, goes, yo, mad lyrics, because we didn't have a title for the song at the time. Goes, yeah, mad lyrics. Became Mad Lyrics forever. Mad Lyrics forever. And yeah, so that summer we ended up going on tour for 21 days with the Bad Brains across Canada. And then every summer after that, we were trying to get on the road with whoever we could, as long as we can perform. We're good. We went on tour with Slaves on Dope. That's Jason Rockman, who works at, I was going to say CKGM, but he works in radio and television. And so we just make it a point to see, you know, who's going out across. And hit the road as much as we could. And, you know, we were touring a lot before it was really a thing. And, you know, we got to places after the Bad Brains tour and they're like, oh, you guys are bad. Cool. So we'd already solidified a little something. Like when we were there, he goes, oh, cool, who are you on tour with? And it was, at the time, it was a lot of punk bands, like NOFX, 10-Foot Pole, Face to Face, like, it was a huge punk thing, and nobody batted an eye that there's a hip-hop band all the time. Mm-hmm. Every time we'd show up, they're like, oh, yo, welcome back, yo, cool. And I think a lot of it was the energy that was, you know, similar to the punk vibe, yeah. Especially when we were performing live. The way me and Orion, Rev feed off of each other, the way, you know, we use the whole stage to our advantage, move around, maybe a bit of stage diving, So,
And I think also, I don't know the full history of punk music, but I think it came out pretty much around the same time as hip hop.
And there was
an energy kind of like similar between punk and hip hop that was kind of like, forget the rest of the, you know, music industry. Like, we're just kind of doing our own thing.
That's a real thing. When we went to New York, when we did our first show in New York, we played at this place called Joker's Rocks. It's an old strip bar. They turned into quote-unquote venue. And, you know, we did that show, and then we had a show the next day. It was a festival, basically. So that's the first time that I realized that, yeah, there's so much similarity. It was a bill with this group called Orange 9mm punk band, and then a few local hip-hop groups, and then some more punk. And all in the same room, sharing the space and performing together. And it blew my mind, because that same night, right upstairs, people left from downstairs to go to a Red Alert party where we met Kid Capri for the first time. It's like, wow. We were just walking out of the building and Capri was on his way in. I was like, what? I look up, there's a lineup going to a Red Alert party. But we had to bounce out the next that night, so we ended up going.
Oh, man. That hurts.
Yeah. So we were supposed to be on that bill, and the promoter was janky. And one of the people that we were staying with told us, yeah, just bun that and just leave. He's, you know, you guys are going to get screwed.
Mm-hmm.
So we bounced. But it got to see a couple of the, you know, performers. And to see that punk rock hip hop blend together, you know?
Wow, man, what an experience.